individual to protect the community. If the community is in danger, with a loud knife. And he is duty bound to protect the community to the extent of sacrificing his life. Because this is exactly the gist of the message which Mordechai sent to Esther. We have discussed it last week. I want just to add, if you have the Rambam, Rambam, Perek Aleph. So you see that there's the first section of Rambam. It's the first section. Perek Hei Aloche Hei. Perek Hei Aloche Hei. You see that there. Yeah. You see the Atera, the first section of Rams, the first. Mado Sefer Amado, you see the Atera. You have it? The first, the Rambam commences with Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, it's Perkei. The Rambam, it's a Mishnah in Trumas. Noshim Shomru Lahem Evde Kechavim. If a city is under siege, or a house is surrounded by the enemy, there are women in the house, and the enemy gives an ultimatum. You have to surrender, extradite, just to one woman, in order we'll dishonor her. Bim love. And if you refuse to surrender her, Netame is kuchen. We'll capture the house and we'll dishonor all of you. Is the lois yetamu kulam? They have no right to extradite anyone. They have no right to surrender any individual in order to save the community or to save, the group. Ve'al yimosru lahem, ve'al yimsru lahem, nefesh achas v'Yisrael. It's forbidden to surrender to them even a single individual, one individual. V'chein, the same is true, imomru lahem evdei kechovim, tnu lanu echod mikem v'naragenu, and again, a house or a city was surrounded by the enemy under siege, the enemy wants just one individual. They'll kill the individual and the city will be saved. Yehorgu kulam, they should all be killed. The ultimatum should be rejected. Should rather incur martyr's death. Val yimsru lahem nefesh achas meYisrael. They have no right to surrender an individual in order to save the community. It's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Trumas. A Mishnah in Trumas. Now, doesn't this Mishnah conflict with our conclusion of last week? Huh? No, why? Why doesn't it conflict? It does not conflict. It is true, it does not conflict. What I would like to know. Huh? I talk all together. No, I said volunteer. As a matter of fact, is this time. Of course, the first answer would be all if the individual volunteers, it's his right, it's his privilege to volunteer and to sacrifice his life in order to save the community. The community has no right to enforce. It's a moral duty, it's not a legal duty. It cannot be enforced. This would be the answer. But if this be the case, then Mordechai actually did not, Esther did not volunteer. There was no offer on the part of Esther, there was no, suggestion the part of Esther to go to the king. She resented it at the beginning. She said, "Kholish v'ish, everybody knows that whoever will appear in the inner court of the king, will be executed. Unless the king will let him touch, scepter." Yes. But he so apparently she argued with him. She finally agreed, and finally, I mean, she offered herself, actually, as a sacrifice for the community. But she offered, so and he tried, actually, not only tried, he tried to coerce her, I mean. Of course, not physically, he couldn't, but simply by words, he tried to indoctrinate her. I mean, the word, the message he sent to Esther was a very sharp and unequivocally, I mean, so to say, an unequivocally, I mean, stringent message. So apparently Mordechai thought that he has a right to influence her. I mean, it was not just it was more than influencing. It was almost coercing. Because he simply threatened her. No, it's also, I mean,
here you are. All equally have the influence to do this, but in the case of Esther, she was unique in terms of what she could accomplish.
So here you are helping the enemy by delivering a victim to the enemy. You are actually aiding the enemy.
Yeah, basically, the answer would be, it's a difference. The difference is not so much in what the community is supposed to do. The difference is what the enemy wants. If the enemy wants to kill a community, then the individual is duty-bound, to save the community and sacrifice himself. On the other hand, if the enemy is not interested in the community, and is concerned with one individual to kill, then the community cannot save itself by sacrificing the individual. It depends upon the ultimatum, you see. But in such cases, Yahadus actually was guided by, not strange, but by one idea. To defy the enemy must be defied. Defiance of the enemy, and not to give in to him, but simply to reject, or preventing him from getting what he wants to get. Here in the case of Noshim Shamolem, if the Chomtulim Achas Memun, Tamo, or give us one, will kill him. So the enemy is interested in one individual. Just one individual, nothing else. They don't want, I mean, to touch the community. The community, I mean, per se, I mean, they are completely indifferent as far as the community is concerned. They want to kill one individual. So they convene, but however, if their request will not be granted, so then they'll kill, I mean, out of because they'll avenge themselves on the community and they'll exterminate the whole community, correct? Then the individual must not be delivered. Because the delivery of the individual would mean, I mean, giving in to the demand of the enemy. You understand? So in order, I mean, simply to defy the enemy, so the community must sacrifice, I mean, all its members and protect, in order to protect one individual. In the case of Mordechai and Esther, it's a different case. You see, the enemy was not interested in Esther. He was interested in the contrary, in the community. And in order to prevent the enemy, I mean, the foe, you understand me, from realizing his intention. So an individual was supposed, I mean, Esther was told to sacrifice her life. It depends what the enemy requests or what the enemy demands. It is possible, someone suggested there is another answer. Because here in the case the Rambam quotes, no individual was singled out. They only said, give us one. One woman, one man, one individual. I mean, why should one individual, the question is, which one? So each individual, I mean, everyone, I mean, can say, each individual can say, why am I supposed to be the, so to say, the sacrificial lamb, why not you? So as a result, they cannot do anything, and the whole community should incur, I mean, death, rather than unjustly sacrificing one individual which hasn't been marked by the enemy. What if the enemy has said, actually, I want this particular individual? The Rambam speaks about it. Vim yirdu klohem. And if the enemy singled out a certain individual, it didn't say just one of you, but a certain individual. V'yomru t'nu lanu pleini en harek eskuchem, give us Mr. So-and-so, deliver. Or we'll exterminate the whole congregation. Imoyo mechuyev miso kesheva ben bichri, if he's a criminal, he's yitne yisalem, they can deliver. V'meyam lam kevat chile, v'mey mechayev miso, but if he's not a criminal, he does not deserve to be punished. Again, Yorgu Kulam Val Yimsulayim Nefeshachas Mishrayim. It makes no difference whether the individual was singled out or wasn't singled out. So this is not a reason why the community should sacrifice many lives in order to save, not to save. And not to save. They wouldn't save the individual at all. I want you to understand. Here is something funny. The individual will not gain anything by it. Because when they'll exterminate the community, they'll exterminate the particular individual. I mean, whom the enemy has singled out and marked, you understand? So actually it doesn't mean the community should sacrifice itself in order to save an individual. Individual will never be saved. You are the kulam, everybody will be exterminated. Everybody will be killed. Becoming complete extermination. So the idea is not saving. So what is the idea? What is the guiding principle? Ah? To defiance. The idea is defiance. The idea is defiance. You're not saving. If you speak in terms of saving a life, protecting a life, so you do it. And say, Mr. X has committed something, which in our opinion is very bad and he deserves capital punishment. If you'll deliver him, all right. If not, we'll simply, we'll have to blow up the town or the house. A very simple ultimatum. So, I mean, they must not deliver. The individual should not be surrendered. No extradition. So what will happen to him? What will happen to this individual? He will not be saved. He will not be protected. He will also be killed. So what do you gain by it? What do you gain? What is the net gain of such a policy? Of resistance and defiance. And this is basically the concept of Kiddush Hashem. Because my mouth has raised the question. You know, Kiddush Hashem is the case of apostasy, of illusory idol worship, you know. All the martyrdom of our saints, I mean, during the period of crusade and during the Khmelnytsky pogroms. We could have saved their lives, I mean, if they had agreed, if they had consented, I mean, to baptism. So they rejected. So Thesis raised the question. After all, I mean, what do you mean baptism? I don't believe that a single Jew believes in Christ and so forth. And everybody knows it's done by force. It's coercion. He does it under duress. So actually there is no sin involved in it. The action per se legally is not culpable. I mean, sorry if I don't mean, if I don't believe, and it's quite obvious to everybody that I don't bow to this particular idol because I believe, because I changed my conviction or I have faith. Simply because someone threatens to kill me. So why should I sacrifice my life? There is no maisa avera, there is no sin involved. Or we accept the viewpoint. He's Potter. He's not considered an idol worshipper. So what? Why not? Why not fool the boy? Why not fool him? I mean, many Jews did it. This is the story of the Moranos. This was the policy of the Moranos. What was their policy after all, I mean? You don't believe, I mean, in Christianity anyway. But it's a question of life and death, I mean. If we'll perform, I mean, just accept Christian faith, so we'll be saved. And clandestinely, we'll observe Yahadus, I mean. You know the story of the Moranos. But the Moranos did not act in conformity with the law. The law requires, I mean, that if it's a question of apostasy, if the alternative is apostasy, then, I mean, death is preferable to apostasy. So the question is, why is it called apostasy? I don't want, I mean, to desert. I don't want to change my faith. At heart, I'm as loyal to the faith as ever. So does actually, I mean, the sprinkling of water does this sprinkling of water make much difference? And Thesis has no answer. Thesis raised this question. Has no answer. The Rambam answers indirectly. But the enemy will think that the Jew has yielded. And this is exactly the point. The enemy should not think for a moment that the Jew has yielded to pressure, that the Jew is a coward. And he is ready to desert his faith. Because he threatens him with death, with torture. That's the Rambam. The Rambam said it in Sefer HaMitzvahs. So the central idea in Kiddush Hashem is defiance. Defiance of any religious persecutor, of any religious tyrant. Even in cases in which, I mean, the action per se is not culpable. The action per se is coercive and actually has no relevance whatsoever. But once the tyrant or the persecutor or the enemy will think that he is triumphant, that he emerged triumphant from the engagement with the Jew, this is exactly what warrants Kiddush Hashem. And this is exactly what the halacha is here. Because here is not a question of saving an individual and sacrifice the community, because the individual will be killed and exterminated to be the community. So why should the community, engage in bloodshed, so to say, in order to not to save one individual? It's just tenacity which makes absolutely no sense, which is absurd. So the answer is, it's not absurd. There's a purpose. What's the purpose? The purpose is defiance and resistance. Yes. We understand that there is no contradiction, no discrepancy between this halacha and the story of Esther. You understand? That's what I wanted to say. Yes. Yes.
Could that be averted through a go wrong a lot?
No. A lot doesn't mean anything. It's not only a question of the choice. The person was already singled out by the enemy. They weren't only Mr. X.
In the first instance.
As even in a case in which the person was singled out and marked by the enemy. So the law is that you should not surrender him to the enemy. What is a girl? A girl means nothing. It's completely wrong. Now, let's just continue. If you'll open me, give us Esther, just. These two psukim. The whole message which Mordechai sent to Esther, they did the Perek, before Perek Hei. Vayim Mordechai lo oshiv es Esther, vatim Esther la'asoch tzavei al Mordechai. Kol avdi ha-melech v'amedinis ha-melech yidim ha-shekol ish v'ish ha-shuyev al ha-melech l'chot tzara pnimis ha-shalei yikorei achas dosi l'omis levad ma'asher yishit li ha-melech ha-shar v'tazov v'choyo v'ani li nikreis lov alech ha-melech zesh l'ishim yeil. So it's interesting. So what did she tell him, basically? What is the gist of her message? What's actually the essence of her, the substance of her message? Not accept. Accepted would be it's a mild understatement. Not only that. Yes, correct. Not only that.
She has been mad.
It means one thing is just a far possibility, one thing is quite probable. What is a far possibility? It's a far-fetched possibility. What is a far-fetched possibility? That she'll survive. That she'll survive. Because she moved from practice. Ahasuerus seldom has given. Ahasuerus has seldom actually, given pardon. To one who entered the dinner court. Dinner court. Yes. And this is quite probable. It's almost a certainty that she would not be pardoned by Ahasuerus and she'll be killed. And then, of course, so then what did she suggest to him? What are the conclusions to be derived from her message? So hence, what is she supposed to do? So she said like that, if I should undertake action now, it was quite early. This happened around Pesach, you see. Vayava Mordechai, Vayas, Kedesh, Tzif, Sol, Vester. We learned where the letter sent out. The letter was sent out by Yikoros if Amele Bachidish Arishim, Bishlish Yosra Bey. Yim Bey, it means the 13th of Nisan. 13th of Nisan. Yeah. Where the letters, the epistles, sealed and sent out. Correct? The 13th of Nisan. Yes. And right away, Amelech Uhama Yoshu Lishtes, Shushan Avech. Right away, Mordechai appeared, at the gate, at the royal gate, sackcloth and so forth. Esther sent, her mate, need to inquire of him, and the message he sent. So it means, the execution of the Amir was supposed to take place when? The implementation of the decree, next Adar, in a year, almost a year, in 11 months. 11 months? That's 11 months? 11 months. It's a long time. And he gave, what did he request of her? The request was a strange one. It was almost absurd. He said, Laris was Pashek Sova Doshnit and Mishishon Lashmidom Nosanlei. Laris, his sister, he gave her a copy of the decree, of the edict, to show it to Esther, Ulahagidlor, and to tell her, Ulitzanisalei, to command her. She used to take, Mordechai was her father, after he adopted her. She was the niece of his father. And he adopted her, and she was disciplined by him and brought up by him, and she took his orders. The pasuk says before, "V'chol asher ein Esther, v'mesmama Mordechai Esther Eisok asher Eisok v'omneite." She had unlimited trust and faith in Mordechai, because Mordechai was her father. She was an orphan, and she was adopted by Mordechai and brought up by Mordechai. She had unlimited faith and trust in him. So it's not Lahavidlor just to tell her. It would be advisable, no. Well, it's Avisoler. So Mordechai simply commanded Esther. Lovel HaMelech means immediately, not to postpone. And to plead with him on behalf of our people. V'atim eresta la'asoch v'atatzavei al Mordechai. כל עבדי המלך והמדינס המלך ידי מה שכל איש ואיש עובר לך המלך על הפחות ספנים של כוח הדס לא מסלם שגיד המלך ודור ואני לא מקריס לבין המלך הזה 30 ימים 30 days has been invited. All right. So what means, since right undertake now something which will fail, I'm certain, that the enterprise will end in failure, and failure means disaster, personal disaster, as far as she is concerned, because she will be executed. And as far as the people is concerned, they wouldn't have anybody to plead on their behalf with the king. Well, why not postpone a while? Perhaps next day, a messenger may come from the king inviting Esther to come. Then she'll have the opportunity to talk to the king. Isn't it logical? It's quite simple and logical. After all, it's not the execution was supposed to take place, in 11 months. There's enough time, And there's no doubt that within that time, that period of time, the king will invite Esther to appear before him. And she wouldn't take the risk, the awful risk, And then she'll be in a better position, to plead with the king, and he should change the decree, the edict. This is exactly what Esther meant to say. Esther did not refuse to go. Esther meant to say that to appear now before the king, he would be foolhardy. Not advisable. I believe it's common sense. What Esther said makes a great deal, a lot of sense. What did Mordechai say? Apparently Mordechai did not change his mind. What did Mordechai say? Vayimah Mordechai le'oshi v'lester al tedame v'nafshich limolel beis ha'melech mekol ha'yudim. Ki macher ishtachish shebois ha'zeis revach v'atzolo yamed la'yudim v'moke macher v'atu v'is avich tevedu mi'yedei ha'mleis p'zeis yegat la'malchus. So how did he counteract, let's say, her argument? How did he refute her argument? After all, he had to refute her argument. It is what do you call it in Hebrew, Nalachik Hebrew? I mean, his advice was Rochek Mischar Vikorev Lehefsed. I mean, the risk was obvious, so the gain was very doubtful. So how did he refute this argument? How did he meet this argument? It's a very practical argument. What do you mean?
During the year, she may no longer be in a position to help.
No, but he said, it is said, Rashi said, on the contrary, he said, first of all, he said, what did she say? If she should be killed, apparently the message here, I mean, is very brief, but apparently it was elaborated to Mordechai, I mean, this is just a very terse report. Recorded the message. She said, if I should be killed, if Ahasuerus should not pardon my appearance, and simply, I mean, let me be executed, then you won't have anybody to appear before the king. Then the people, I mean, the community is lost. At least now you have me. And at the opportune time, at the opportune moment, I'll plead with the king. But if you rush me, you press me, I mean, to take action immediately, so and I should be killed, executed, I mean, there will be no one, I mean, in the royal palace who will say a good word on behalf of the Jewish people, correct? So what did he say? So first of all, he rejected that. He said, Revach v'atzolo yamei la'yudim makmach. Don't think that you are the only person who actually can save the Jews. I don't know who else, but I know that the Jewish community will be saved. That's number one, I mean. So, I mean, it means if she should be executed by Ahasuerus, so someone else will come in. He didn't know, but Revach v'atzolo yamed ayukim v'akmacha. Salvation will come from another source. So it means like that, what he said, that no individual, this is something very important in Yadus. No individual, no matter how important his service is, and no matter how indispensable his contribution is, individuals of historical, of historical relevance, and played great roles in history, in Jewish history, can say that he is responsible for the salvation of the people, or for the perpetuation of the Jewish community and so forth on. Individual is duty bound to do his share. But if not this individual, someone else would have come. This is it. Revach v'atzolo yamei la'yud mokemacha. You are now in a position to make your contribution. But don't think even one moment that you are the only one. Someone else will save the Jewish people. Revach v'atzolo yamei la'yud mokemacha. This number one. Number one. And second, what did he say? You'll be summoned. Probability was she'll be summoned. But he said something else. Someone remarked it. Who knows whether you'll be queen long enough? Who knows whether you'll be queen long enough? If Ahasuerus can change his mind, was not a very persistent fellow, not very consistent. So who knows, next day he'll find someone else. Even the pasuk says, interesting, so after he married Esther, he should have given up, I mean, this, he should have dissolved all the agencies, So apparently still, Shashgas, whoever he was, or Haggai, was still busy. So who knows, he'll find a better looking one way. Or one will find grace in his eyes. I mean, she'll be better looking than you. And you'll be simply, removed from your throne. And so actually don't postpone it, because I'm not too sure that you'll be queen the next year, the next 12 months. What does Rashi say? Shur yeim et dumisen zman arige bod al shon abo igat la malchus im tagi ligdulo shad bo achshav. You'll have the same glory that you enjoy now, or the same position, the same singular position that you are enjoying now. It's exactly. This is number one. Number two. Number one is that you are not the only person. And secondly, who knows whether you'll have the opportunity a month from now, not only a year from now, a month from now, or a week from now. Who knows? It's very hard on me. I mean, to guess Achashverosh's mood. And to predict, his relationship, to you, next week, or tomorrow, you see. Leis kazeisi gaat l'malchus. And secondly, the leis kazeisi gaat l'malchus can be interpreted two ways. Mi yodeyem leis kazeisi gaat l'malchus, if next year, at this time, you'll still be queen, in leis kazeisi kais chayo, in leis kazeisi, if next year, at this time, you'll be queen. It means not only next year, this time you'll be clean. Whether you'll be clean tomorrow, or after tomorrow, or next week, or next month, you cannot postpone. You're expecting Ahasuerus to summon her, to invite her to come. He might dislike you, and that's all. Send you away, or kill you, like, the way he did with Vashti. It's number one, not number two. Number three, there's not a pshat in ways, because they say got the mouse. Perhaps the reason that you became queen is because in order to save the people. This the Rav Nezra interprets like that. In Leis Kozeis in Gaas Kamalchus, not in Leis Kozeis a year from now, but means for this occasion, for this situation, in order to save the people. Because as a matter of fact, it was incomprehensible. Mordechai did not understand why Esther was chosen queen. Why was she chosen as the queen? A matter of fact, Chazal says that she was not the best looking girl. Chazal says that she was, a matter of fact, she had only charm, that's all. Vatiso chen lefonav, in Hebrew chen does not mean beauty, it means charm, on the contrary. V'neach motzachen b'nei Hashem. So Chazal says Neach was just like the others. But he somehow God liked him. Personality. Yeah, personality, charm, yes, whatever. I didn't understand. You see that Mordechai, the very moment Esther was chosen, so Mordechai realized that there is something, that the future holds something in store for our people. So v'cholim v'yim Mordechai misalach lifnei chatzar, v'cholim v'yim Mordechai misalach v'azir. This was before she was taken to the king and was chosen queen. But even later, by Yomi Moim Shin Efter, he was sitting in the royal gate, in front of the gate. What was he doing there? What was he doing there? Because Mordechai expected news. Somehow. He expected something will happen, because he could not understand that his niece, Esther, why his niece was chosen as the queen of the empire, the Persian empire. He couldn't understand it. He didn't attribute it, I mean, just to natural factors, like beauty or charm. Something the Ashgoche prepared Esther to perform a task, a great task, to make a contribution, but didn't know what kind of a contribution. What will happen? What situation will develop? The very moment he heard about the edict, so he realized what Esther was chosen for. And if Esther was chosen for this job, so there is no risk involved. So Mordechai was assured already, was certain that nothing will happen to Esther. You understand? If she was chosen as queen, only for this purpose, to save the Jewish community, to protect the Jewish community, and to make Ahasuerus, abolish, the Gzere, so you realize that nothing will happen, and certainly when she'll appear before the king, the king will certainly pardon her, even though she was not invited, and that she'll, that her plea will be successful. That's exactly what Mordechai realized. So Mordechai sent actually three messages to Esther. First of all, you are not the only one to whom the Ashgoche has entrusted the fate and the destiny of the Jewish people. You are now in a position to save the people, but you are not the only one. If you will fail, someone else will come in, will substitute you. I don't know who, but I'm sure that someone else will perform the job courageously, the way, he's supposed to. It's number one. Because Esther apparently emphasized her singular position to save the people. This is exactly number one. You're not alone. Second, I'm not too sure that next week or a month from now, you'll still be queen and you'll enjoy the same privileges and prerogatives you are enjoying now. So, Altach Mitzena, don't miss the opportunity. The opportunity offered itself now, utilize it. And third, this is, now I understand why you were chosen queen. It's not for your beauty or for your personal charm. You were chosen queen because you'll be the messenger and the spokesman and the apostle of the Jewish people. So don't postpone it. This is exactly why God has chosen you queen. You'll find it in Kalir Spayet. Wherever there is a Melech HaChashverish in the later Psukim, so the Kalir translated into Melech Malchei HaMlochim. Balayla hu no doshnas HaMelech, the Gemara already says, HaChashverish didn't sleep, so what of it? But God Almighty didn't sleep, God Almighty was aroused. That's why the miracle happened, you see. So actually, you are not chosen by Ahasuerus, you are chosen by the Melech Malchei HaMlochim. And this is the reason, and this is the purpose, this is the objective. And you are called, I call upon you, to fulfill your duty. So three messages. She was chosen for it. No one knows what will happen next. And third, if she will fail, someone else will come in. That's it. So. And apparently Esther understood. But there is something else which Mordechai said, and it's very important to American Jews.
Is that
subconsciously she may be trying to save her life? Yeah, just a minute. This is the idea of a common destiny of the Jewish people. That Jewish people have a common destiny. What I call a common destiny, in Hebrew it would be a geral mishutaf, a goral mishutaf. A common destiny means no one can save himself if the Jewish people are exposed to danger. He cannot say, I am safe. I have seen it. I've experienced this. When primitive and beastly anti-Semitism was rampant in Poland. It was in the 20s, the late 20s, when I came to Germany. So German Jews used to say, it can't happen to us. It cannot happen here. And they gave me, and they gave reasons which were quite valid. Kodim, weighty reasons, I mean. The same reasons I hear now in America from Western Jews as well. Because we are in, the Jewish community was, has never been integrated in the Polish community, correct? Never been integrated. The Jews in Poland lived in a ghetto, completely separated from the Polish community. I mean, the language was a different language. Now, it was not just a question, a distinction as to worship, but what I mean, Jew and Goy lived in two different worlds. Habits, mores, and I mean, culture. Actually, I mean, it was a completely two different communities. So actually, the Jew remained a stranger to the Pole, even though the Jew lived in Poland for so many, many hundreds of years. I mean, it's one of the oldest Jewish, I mean, Yeshuvim, as Poland. The Jew remained a stranger, an outsider. The Pole didn't know the Jew. He didn't know the Jew. Didn't know. After 1,000 years, I mean, sojourn in Poland, the Jew was foreigner, alien to the Pole. He didn't know. Even though he saw the Jew and he met the Jew and did business with the Jew and the Jew, I mean, performed many tasks on behalf of me of the Polish aristocrats, the so-called Schlachta, but still the Jew was an alien to the Pole. That's what the German Jews used to tell me. So that's why he hates, because anti-Semitism basically is the hatred of the alien, of the foreigner, of the one whom I don't understand, whom I don't know. But in Germany, the Jewish community was integrated completely. More integrated than American Jewish communities. It was more integrated in many respects, because it's a longer history, I mean, after all. I mean, integration of a community into its environment, I mean, takes time. It's not only a question of language. It's a question of so many intangible factors. It takes time. It was completely integrated as to language, as to culture, as to participation and contribution. I mean, after all, I mean, the most prominent writers in the 20s in Germany were Jews. I mean, the greatest producers, Jews. I mean, greatest scientists, Jews. I mean, wherever you turned, I mean, you came across Jewish names. How is it possible? Same argument. I am in the royal palace. I'll be saved. The poor Jews in the ghettos will be killed or will be persecuted. Logically impossible, the logically absurd and paradoxical happened. It's very strange. I can't understand it, I'll tell you frankly. That's exactly what Mordechai said to Esther. I mean, subconsciously, Esther, somehow he suspected her. That subconsciously, Esther thinks that she'll survive anyway the Holocaust. Because she will touch the queen. Who will threaten the queen, I mean? The beloved queen of Ahasuerus, not even Haman. In spite of his arrogance and impudence. He will never dare to touch the queen. First of all, no one knew her background, I mean, to what race she belonged. I mean, no one knew. In Esther Magad, some of us melodic, I mean, no one knew that she was a Jewess. No one knew. Apparently, I mean, so Esther certainly will survive. So that's what he sent her again. This is the fourth, actually, message he sent her. Al tedami v'nafshech li'molad b'isam melech mekol yirim. If this thought is somehow, so to say, I mean, actually, I mean, you have this thought in your mind that you'll be protected and you'll save yourself, and nothing will happen to you, and you're not supposed to sacrifice your life for the lives, I mean, of the Jews who live in the various ghettos throughout the Persian Empire, you're making a fatal mistake. The Jews will be saved. I am more concerned with your fate than with the fate of all the Jews. The Jews will be saved. But to be the queen of Ahasuerus, there is no security in this career, I mean, to be the queen of Ahasuerus. It might be that on the day of the pogroms, Ahasuerus will finally decide to send you away. And you'll find yourself in the Jewish ghetto and will be exterminated with all the Jews. Basically, I mean, this is more or less, this is more or less the gist of Mordechai's message. No individual should consider himself indispensable. I mean, it was the trouble with Dr. Weizmann, was the trouble, that he considered himself indispensable for the Jewish people. This was his trouble. This was actually a defect in his personality. A very capable man, actually sacrificed his career, sacrificed his life for the Jewish people, for Eretz Israel. But he thought that if not for him, the Balfour Declaration wouldn't have been released. And it's not true. It's not true. Historically not true. Lately I read in some, I believe it's But he considered himself, I knew him personally, he considered himself indispensable for the Jewish people. If not for him, the whole dream of the Jewish state would have never been realized. And that's why he was so bitter later, when he had no influence. I mean, very capable man actually sacrificed his career, sacrificed his life for the Jewish people. For Eretz Israel. But he thought that if not for him, the Balfour Declaration wouldn't have been released. And it's not true. It's not true. Historically not true. Lately I read in some, I believe it's some. But he considered himself, I knew him personally, he considered himself indispensable for the Jewish people. If not for him, the whole dream of the Jewish state would have never been realized. And that's why he was so bitter later, when he had no influence. I mean, and the government, he thought that the Jewish people are ingrates, or the issue at least, I mean, is not grateful enough to him. Because the presidential office in Eretz Israel is just more of a ceremonial office, a ceremonial character. This was his, basically what I resented in him. And this is exactly what Mordechai sent, the word he sent Esther. No individual is indispensable. Sometime individual is chosen, selected. You should consider it as a privilege, rather, to act on behalf of the Jewish people. But if this individual had fails, someone else will step in. That's exactly the first message. The second message is that Esther don't enjoy a sense of false security. You're not secure. Your security and the security of the poor Jew in the ghetto are on the same level. And the third message, actually, is that you were chosen queen of Persia, of the great empire of Persia, for one purpose only, not because of your virtues, but because of your beauty, of your figure, your face, your appearance. It's not because of that, your charm, because you are the messenger whom God has selected, to save his people. And don't fail in this undertaking. Don't fail to discharge your duty, which was imposed upon you by the Almighty. Now, I want to remove something, to say something about the Megillas Esther itself. It's very important. It is very important, and basically there's quite a literature on it, mostly of anti-Semitic nature. What happened? What transpired? After Esther succeeded in persuading Ahasuerus, to remove Haman from the premiership, and Haman was executed, as a matter of fact. What happened? Actually, the edict was not removed. The edict was not abandoned. was not canceled. And as a matter of fact, even many Jews, I come across such opinions and literature and essays and articles quite often, say that Megillas Esther is a terrible story of bloodthirsty Jews who just killed innocent Gentiles. Exactly. And many Jews are misled by this story. The story is, if you'll see, we now begin to understand Megillas Esther much better in light of recent events. Let's say recent, not only events of this year, which are important too, but events of the last two decades, I would say, last two or three decades. We begin to realize the importance of Megillas Esther, and that the Jews actually were engaged in combat, were not just bloodthirsty beasts who just wanted to kill as many Gentiles as possible. If you take chapter Ches, Vatesev Esther, Vatedaber Lifnei HaMelech, Vatipel Lifnei Raglo, Vatevk Vatischanelei, להעביר אסרו הסומו מהגוגי ושמחשבתי השחושב על היהודים. To rescind them, actually, the conspiracy of Haman, and to revoke, the edict, correct? ויש את המלך לסטר עכשיו ותעזוב את הכנסת המלך, ותאמר יקוסיב להושי וסספורים מחשבס הומון בן עמדוס הגוגי אשר כוסר לאבץ היהודים אשר חוד מדינס המלך כי יכוח הולך וראיסי ורא שיב תסמי יכוח הולך וראיסי בעובדם מלדתי. You have it. So she asked what I mean that the edict be cancelled. Be declared void. Nullified. ויאמר המלך לאסתר אחשוורוש לאסתר המלכה למרדכי היהודי. In the base homon asati l'ester, v'esi tolu aloeitz, al asher sholach yodei b'yehudim. It means, I have punished him because for his desire, he has not accomplished yet, he hasn't been implemented yet, for his desire, or for his conspiracy, for his intention, to destroy. V'atem kisvel ayudim katev b'neichem, you can write whatever you want with reference to the Jews, v'shem ha'melech, the chismet abasmar can seal it with the ring of the king. Kichsov asher nichtov b'shem ha'melech v'nachtem b'tabas ha'melech ein loshiv. Because any edict which was written on behalf of the king and was sealed with the tabas, with the ring of the king, cannot be revoked, cannot be cancelled, cannot be nullified. Well, what did he mean? He meant, I can't revoke the edict. You see. No royal edict could be nullified according to the law in Persia. Even if the king himself changes his mind, the edict prevails. This was the law in Persia. It's not a matter of fact. A law passed by Congress cannot be just revoked by Congress. So you have, Congress has to be, it's a new act of legislation, you see. If new act, Congress cannot say, I don't want the law. A new act of legislation, a new bill should be introduced, in order, to nullify a certain amendment or a certain law, whatever it is, this type of legislation was not, known to the Persian kings. The Persian court did not know legislation for the purpose of nullifying a decree which was issued by the emperor himself, and was signed by the emperor and sealed with the emperor's tabas ring. You know the problem, Haman, of course, it's wrong. You see, it is. It's Yeshua of Ahasuerus, understand? It's wrong, of course, and I've punished him, And I gave a turn over his house. His house apparently was a sign of status. Yeah, and I'll appoint perhaps Mordechai as prime minister instead of Haman. Yeah, to substitute for Haman, but it cannot be changed. This is the law. Apparently, Esther and Mordechai didn't know of that law. This law was unknown to them. They thought if the king can issue an edict, he can change an edict. He can revoke an edict. He can nullify. No, he says, Tichsov Asher Nichtov B'Shem HaMelech V'Nachtem B'Tabaz HaMelech Eino Hashim. She asked, what did she ask? V'Teimer Im Ala Melech Tov. If the king is kind, if I find grace in his eyes, V'Choshar Adon Alifnei HaMelech, it's so he considers it as important. The Teva Nibeino of anyway, of course, enough flattery and panegyrics. You could save just one letter, one epistle should be sent out, Lohoshif, to nullify, to revoke, Esas Forim, the edict, Machsheves Homan Ben Amdoso HaGogi, Asha Kosav La'aved Esayudim, Asha B'chol Medine Samera. That's what you ask me. After all, the purpose was not to kill Haman. The purpose was to save the community. And Mordechai took it for granted that after the meal, to which Achashverosh, got into a tantrum, defeat, and he came back, and Haravena said that there is the pole which Mordechai has, Haman has put up for Mordechai and Haman was hanged, executed, that she asked Achashverosh, to revoke, to cancel, the edict, and that's all, and the salvation will be completed. No, suddenly she hears from Achashverosh about Persian law that such no change, a royal edict can never be changed. Not even the king, even though the king changes his mind and he realizes that the wrong was committed, it was a mistake, an error, a fatal error, but once it was signed and sealed and sent out and proclaimed as a law, there is no way how to change. For instance, the Congress per se cannot change the Constitution. It must have a process, of two-thirds of the states, of the legislature. This is, in Persia, the law couldn't be changed. That's all. Not even the king himself. So now, what is the solution? So she failed in her mission. Solution is only one thing, to arm the Jews and let them defend themselves. This is not cancellation of the old edict. The old edict was, that the enemy be armed, provided with ammunition, as Russia does it with Nassau, provides ammunition, and declare an embargo on ammunition as far as Jews are concerned. This was the substance of the edict. It is ancient history. It sounds like modern history, right? Like headlines from the papers, yes, or on the radio. This was an embargo on ammunition to Jews. No one is supposed to sell any arms to the Jews because the Jews have got to be exterminated. There's no reason. They have no right to defend themselves. You see, no right of defense. This was the edict of Holland. When the edict was issued, Laharig Lahabit Lahashmi Laharig Lasba Yudim Minarva Zokin Tavanoshim Biyemechot Li is Asidim. What does it mean Asidim Layemaze? Should be armed, should be prepared. Preparedness. They knew very well the Jews will try to defend themselves. So the edict was the law, the proclamation of the edict, emphasize, li es asidim layem azeh. That means the Jews should not be asidim. The Jews will not be able, to arm themselves, to defend themselves. Simply an embargo, no one is allowed to sell any arms, any firearms to a Jew, but they can sell all the arms, all the ammunition ones, to the Eviyahudim, to the enemies. That's all. Now, with the change of policy, and Ahasuerus himself, they realized the complexity of the problem. He said, "V'atem kisru al Yehudim." You can write about the Jews, katev beinechem, whatever you want to write. Does mean whatever you want. What can they write if the former edict will not be revoked, will not be cancelled, will not be nullified. So you mean Katev Benechem? What sympathy? A message of sympathy, of compassion. What is Katev Benechem? It means, no, one thing. B'shem HaMelech v'chismet HaBaas HaMelech. T'chsov asher nichto b'shem HaMelech v'nachtem et HaBaas HaMelech in Loshim. But I cannot grant you this request. This request, I cannot nullify the decree, the edict which was issued. Vayikor Sefer HaMelech v'chidosh ahi v'yachtem b'taz b'as v'yichtem b'shem HaMelech achsher v'yachtem et HaBaas HaMelech asher nosan HaMelech la'yehudim. The king has granted the right to the Jews. Asher b'chol ir v'ir v'yikoel to assemble. I mean, they had no right of assembly anymore, you see. In order to prepare, I mean, a defense, you have to assemble, I mean. An individual cannot defend themselves against a multitude. So you have to organize armies, I mean, you have to organize not an army, brigades. But the Jews had no right to recoil before. No right of assembly, no public assembly. Any assembly of Jews who used to be dispersed, I mean. So how could you train the Jews, I mean? How could you prepare them to defend themselves? Likoil v'lamed al nafshom, and to defend themselves. I mean, v'lamed al nafshom, plain English, to defend themselves. And if to defend, they have a right l'hashmid, l'harek, l'abed, eskol cheil amem dilo. Any army, Atzorim Eson, which will lay siege to their cities. Atzorim Eson, what does mean Tzorim? Rashi says always that there is a difference between Eiv and Tzar. Eiv means one who has evil intentions vis-a-vis somebody. Just conspiring. And Tzar means one is implementing his evil intentions. Tzar basically means, I mean, to besiege or to lay siege to a town, to a community. What mean Atzorim Eson? Those who will attack them. Simply. It's the same story at what happened in June, I mean, in Eretz Israel. Atzorim Eson. Tavon Hashem Shlomo Meis, whoever, to defend themselves there. They have the full right to defend themselves. Beyim Echot. Pasishegan Aksov, Nasindos Bechol Medino Medino, Golu Lechol Amin, Velias Ayyudim, Asidim, again Asidim, here is the Yudim Asidim. The Yudim were armed, provided with ammunition, given the opportunity, I mean, to organize defense brigades. We knocking to avenge himself, may they, I mean, from those who want to kill them. Who fired the first shot to the same problem which the United Nations dealt with, I mean. Who cares who fired the first shot? What difference does it make? I don't know who fired Miglesesta the first shot. We still don't know who fired the first shot, I mean, in the sign up in the desert. This is exactly. This is it. This is exactly. Now, ובשניים עשר חדש לחדש הדור, בשליש עשר ים בי, אשר גיר דבר המלך ודוסי לא עושה הסביים אשר סיברוי והיהודים לישלט בוהם. What do you mean לישלט? The word לישלט is characteristic. לישלט means, שילטה means unlimited usually. כהשולטון לפונכו. We say in כהשילטון לפונכו, or השולטון לפונכו. Means unlimited. Unlimited power. Power which cannot be resisted. Power to which no one can offer resistance. It means omnipotence. Asher sibru eivei ha'yehudim, they intended lishlat b'hem. It means to exercise unlimited power. It means unlimited power. It means without, I mean, power which the Jews will not be able to resist. because the Jews will not be able to defend themselves. V'nafichu, that's what happened. Asha yishletu ha-yehudim meimu b'sneihu. Why? Ki nofal pardom al kol ha-amim. The resistance, the pasuk tells us that actually when the war, it happened exactly then, what happened in Sinai Peninsula? They were on the run, I mean. And the Jews pursued them. I mean. It's the same story. Ki nofal pardom al kol ha-amim. And that's all. And take a look. Tezayin, ushor ha-yudim, asher b'mdinas ha-melech, nikhalu have assembled, posuk tezayin. The women of Nafshom, defending their lives. Of course, if you defend yourself, you have to kill. You can't defend yourself. If someone wants to kill you, I mean, kill him. First, abol ha-orgah ha-shkir ha-orgah. So the old rule in Yahadus. This is exactly what happened here. It's a different story. You understand it better now. After the Hitler Holocaust and the story in Eretz Israel, with Russia arming Egypt and all Western powers declaring an embargo on our shipment of arms to Eretz Israel, we understand the Megillas Esther better. It's also a question of self-defense, nothing else. And this is exactly what happened. Nothing else. Had Ahasuerus revoked, I mean, the edict? Had he simply cancelled, I mean, his previous command, there wouldn't have been any need, I mean, for defense, and the whole story would have been a different one. But since he couldn't do it, the law prevented him, so the only way was for the Jews is to defend themselves. Of course, if Russia hadn't armed Nasser, the whole world wouldn't have taken place. This is not apologetics. I want to know. This is plain pshat, plain interpretation of the Megillah. Whoever knows Hebrew and knows the semantics will understand that this is the truth. Here's what you want to ask. Very simple. I mean, I'll give you an example, for instance. Just a moment. Yeah. It's a bit, there is a strange passage here. Vayimer Shmuel, the story of Agag, kasher shiklo noshim ha-becho, ken tishkal minoshim imecho. As thy sword has robbed the women of children, so shall thy mother be bereaved among women. Correct? Those mean, thy sword has robbed women of children. Where? Where did it happen? No. Speaking about the present, Shmuel and Agag spoke about it. It is the story, apparently. I mean, Agag or Amalek did what the Arabs do now, I mean, some terror bands were organized. They used to infiltrate the Jewish territory, coming into Israel, and kill children, kill women. You've got to see it in a different perspective, you see. And he said, Kasha Shikla Noshim Chabecho, Kintishka Noshim Imecho. In the way, many mothers lost their children on account of you, because they had a habit, apparently, of killing children. This was the way how he wanted to terrorize, and to confuse, Israel. He used to kill little children. He used to kidnap children and kill them. Came to Tishkal Menashe Mimecha. In the same manner, your mother will be bereaved among women. This is exactly. I mean, when they ask for the second day, it meant they should have a second, they should have the right the second day to defend themselves. Because they, Esther knew that in Shushan there are many who are still conspiring to kill the Jews. All right, now they lost the first round, there'll be a second round. And they thought about a second round in Shushan. The Megillah is very terse, I mean. The Novi is very terse and brief, I mean. You've got to read between the lines. Esther knew there are certain groups who conspire, which conspire, I mean, to continue. But now, for the moment, I mean, the Jews had, had advantage of being armed and being prepared. But they thought, all right, it's not now, it's later, in a month from now, in 2 months, in 5 months from now. I mean, see, the edict cannot be cancelled, I mean. The edict continues, I mean. The edict is valid. Forever. So, I mean, the danger, I mean, is quite acute, you understand. It hasn't passed yet. And she knew of groups, of bands, of a movement, going to keep quiet, to go underground for a while, keep quiet for a while, and then later, when the Jews will forget about the whole incident, so there, someone told me, I don't want to mention his name, that Tito told him, the war was won in the first 4 hours, in the morning, between four and eight, I believe, the morning is told, yes. Next time, the first 4 hours will belong to us. That's exactly. Because Tito, in this regard, is worse than anybody else. That's what he said. The first 4 hours on June the 5th belonged to the Jews. Next time it belonged to the Arabs, he said to us. This exactly what Esther was afraid. They'll make a surprise attack on the Jews, and the Jews will be defenseless, and they'll exterminate. See, the edict is in force, I mean. So Esther said, you know, sing a moch ala yudim las is kadasa yeh. So, I mean, if we could now, I mean, believe me, if not for Russia, I mean, what should Israel do now? Attack Egypt? The only trouble is Russia in the Middle East. Otherwise, Israel would have attacked Egypt long ago, if not for Russia. I mean, you sometimes, I mean, engage in preventive war, I mean, actually. All right, what do you want to do? No, apparently it was good for forever. It should start that day. What? Should start. This is exactly what it is, I mean, this is the story. It's just the Jews and the defense. But sometimes the Jews were defenseless, and during the Ahasuerus, I mean, in the story of Esther, the Jews could defend themselves, in June 1967. It's exactly the same story. Now I would like to call your attention to something else. The story how Purim was accepted. It's not a plain story. We'll start Pasuk Yutes. Alkena Yehudim Aprozim Alkena Yehudim Aprozim Ayeshvim Bore Aprozis Eisim Esim Arboroso Vesim Chamisho El Chedesh Ador Simcho Mishte Veyom Tov Vemishleach Mones Ish Lereyu Umatonis Levyenim, correct? Sorry. No, correct, you are right. Vayichtiv Mordechai Sadvorim Ha'ilah Yishtasvah Mokol Ha'yudim Asher Bechol Midin Nisam Melech Ha'chashveish Ha'kev V'cheikim Lekayim Aleyem Liyisesim Esim Ha'boso L'chidish Ador V'esim Chamishoso Bey Bechol Shona V'shona Kayom Ma'ashonochu Behem Ha'yehudim Me'iveyem V'cheish Nepech Lehem Me'yodim L'simcho correct? Correct. אל תמכור אל היום מהיום, אלה פורים, השם הפור, על כן הכל. קימו וקיבלו הירום עליהם, ועל זר, וכל הנדיב עליהם, וליהו ולנסייס משני היום אלה, כסוף הזמן, חודשון ושונו. יום אלה נזכור ונעשים, וכל דיר ודיר, משפוחה, משפוחה, מדינים דינה, ויהיה ויהיה, מהפורים אליה, מתחיירים, זיכרון ליוסף מזר. ותבטי עמיד. He said already that the Jews started to celebrate it, to celebrate Purim. Why, I mean, the emphasis, again, I mean, V'kibul ha-yurim esha asher ha-chilu la-ha says, Kimu v'kibul ha-yurim aleim, v'al-zahamu k'al-nurim aleim, v'yisayis ha-yom aleim. It's too long, I mean, the Megillah usually is very terse and brief, I mean. It's too long, the Megillah is somehow, I mean, recording, I mean, the history of Purim, I mean, in a very strange manner. Basically, the Ramban already noticed. והיהודים, על כן היהודים הפרוזים, הישום בורי הפרוזייס, איסי מסיים אבוס על חידש עדו, שמחו ומשתו ויומטיב, ומשליח מונס איש לרעיו. It's פוסוק יוטס, yes? פוסוק יוטס, correct? This apparently was a spontaneous acceptance of Purim on the part of just of the יהודים בורי הפרוזים in the open cities. Not in the walled cities. Because the Yehudim, the Mukof Eschemo, the walled cities are not mentioned here. The residents of the Mukof Eschemo are not mentioned here. Alkin ha-Yehudim, ha-Prozim, ha-Yeshvim, Bore, ha-Prozis, Esim, Esim, Abos, ha-Lachidish, Ador, Simche, U-Mishte, V-Yimtev, U-Mishle, Achmon, Esish, L-Reyo. Va-Yichtev, Mordechai, Eskol, Ha-Dvorim, La-Ila, Ve-Yish, Eskol, Ha-Kol, Ha-Yehudim, Le-Kayim, Aleyem, Le-Yisim, Esim, Abos, ha-Lachidish, Ador, ועשיים חמישי עשר בי בכל שונו ושונו to observe not only the 14th but the 15th as well. It means in other words that Mordechai recommended that Purim be observed not only by the residents of the open cities but by the residents of the walled cities as well, because the walled cities observe Purim on the 15th day of Afador, I mean, this year in Eretz Yisrael, they'll have many cities like that. Hebron, and old Yerushalayim. About New Yerushalayim, it was a question, a very serious question. But old Yerushalayim, there's no problem. It's a Mukef Eschem Meis Yeshua Benun. And Hebron is a Mukef Eschem Meis Yeshua Benun, and there are a few more cities. Mukef Eschem Meis Yeshua Benun. And these people who lived in the walled cities, there are many walled cities, you see. And the Ramban says very well, the Ram quotes him. The Ramban says, what is the idea that spontaneously only the people who live in the open cities accepted, the holiday of Purim, and they began to celebrate it? And Mordechai recommended that not only the residents of the open cities, but of the walled cities as well. Why? Because basically, the Jews in the open cities were exposed more to danger than those in the walled cities. Because the Jews were in the walled cities, and there was a garrison. Apparently the garrison, the walled city, not all garrisons, were enemies of the Jews, they didn't conspire. On the contrary, the Jews in the walled cities, thought that they would be protected, by the garrison and the wall and the fortress. They did not think they are as exposed to danger as those living in the villages and in the open cities. So they did not rejoice so much. They did not rejoice. Again, they thought, they'll save themselves. Only the Jews in the small cities, in the open country, were exposed, to extermination, to the danger of being exterminated. Not the Jews in the walled cities. Alkin ha-Yudim ha-Prozim, ha-Yeshvim Bore ha-Prozis, Eisim, Esim, Abos, Al-Chidesh Ador, Simche, U-Mishte, V'Yimtev, U-Mishleach, Moneis, Ish L'Reyo. Very interesting. What is missing here? The walled cities, the residents of the walled cities, and another precept of Purim, a very important central precept of Purim, the Matonis Lavienim, charity and Purim. ויכתב מרדכי את הדברים האלה, וישלח ספרים על כל היהודים אשר בכל מדינת המלך אחשוורוש, הקרבים והחיקים, וקיים עליהם ליססים, מסיים, אבו עשר לחידש אדור, V'sim chamishosa, but it means that the walled cities should join the open cities in celebrating Purim. Again, the same idea. No exceptions among Jews. No exemptions. If there is a common destiny, no one can simply extricate himself from this particular destiny. Everyone is involved in a common Jewish historical destiny. This is very important. Basically, that's why we are called Am. Am. Am is a derivative from Im, together, with. This is Am. I mean, this is philologically correct. It's not Drush. It's philologically correct. This is Am. Am means Im, together. Am. The Am. It means we are together. There's no discrepancy. There's no distinction. All Jews are the same aristocrats. And no Jew should tell himself or simply try to persuade himself that he will be an exception. He will be an exemption. Yes. And he says, V'kibila Yehudim is asher echilu la'aseis. Interesting. V'kibila Yehudim, and the Yehudim have accepted is asher echilu la'aseis, what they started to do spontaneously. What did they start to do spontaneously? Jews, that the residents that Purim was celebrated in the open towns. That's a shechilu lasis. They also accepted asher kosav Mordechai aleihem. What Mordechai added? What did Mordechai add? That the entire Jewish community, regardless of where they live, regardless of whether they live in the walled city, and they had protection, and the war with the garrison, with the commander of the garrison on friendly terms, and the commander of the garrison, promised them, that he'll protect them, he'll guard, he'll never let in the enemies. We know during the Chmelnytsky, pogroms, that the Jews in the walled cities, then the Poles promised them, to protect them. And what happened was in many, Niemirov and Tulchin, and what happened, that the Poles, the aristocracy, the Schlachta, the Polish Schlachta, the aristocracy, has, reached a deal, an agreement with the Cossacks, that they'll let them in, they'll open the gate at night, and they'll kill the Jews, but the Poles be saved. Of course, the agreement was never honored. They killed the Jews first, and then they killed the Poles as well. This is history, it's just all history. But Jews, when a person is in danger, a person is in a hopeless situation. You see, you stretch out your hand for a straw. You say, drown, a person who is about to drown, will stretch out his hand. We reach out for a straw in order to save his life. Apparently the people in the walled city thought they are protected. V'kibir ha'yudin l'isashre chelo la'aseis, v'isakos ha'modach aleim, ki homon ben amdoso ha'agogi. Please listen. Seirer kol ha'yudin. Homon doesn't distinguish between a Jew in a walled city or a Jew in a small town, in a hamlet. Between a Jew who resides in a palace or a Jew who resides or lives in a shanty. Haman does that. If Haman made up his mind to exterminate, he would have done a thorough job. Everybody would have been exterminated. So hence, the salvation is all-inclusive, and everybody must participate in the celebration of Purim. Ki Haman ben Amdoso tzira kol ha-yudim choshev al ha-yudim le'abdam. Interesting is, he added something, u'maton eslo evyenim, Mordechai. Because maton eslo evyenim is symbolic. Mishto v'simcho mishleach mones, I want you to understand. Mishto v'simcho mishleach mones is simply symbolic, simply of joy, which, is due to an event in my life, which actually, I was saved, or my status was enhanced, it's an event, a friendly event in my life, joy. But it can be, the joy can be very selfish, and very egotistic, not express itself in manifesting and demonstrating a feeling of solidarity. See, Mishleach Mones Ishla Reo, or Simcha Mishtere Yom Tev, does not manifest a sense of solidarity among all Jews. Does not manifest at all. I mean, I rejoice, I celebrate because I was saved. I send some presents, gifts to my friends, because I would have been exterminated, and my friends would have been exterminated. We both rejoice. So I mean, in order to express joy, you exchange gifts. I mean, it's a way how to express joy, satisfaction, merriment. But Matonis Levianim has a different kind, represents a different idea. Matonis Levianim means a sense of solidarity. Solidarity. It's very interesting. Wherever the Chumash speaks about Tzedakah, without an exception, usually when the Chumash speaks about Jews, he'll use the term Re'eyu, his neighbor, his next door neighbor. Re'eyu basically is not a friend, it's a neighbor, an acquaintance. An acquaintance, yes. Ki yigach sheirish sheireyu. Ki yitem ishal re'eyu keseh ve'kelem lishmeh ve'gunaf be'sayish. Ki sovei bekerem re'acho. Ve'afto le're'acho kamecho. Re'eyu. Whenever the Torah speaks of tzedakah, so the Re'eyu is substituted by Ochicho, by your brother. Ki yomuch Ochicho imoch, umoch me'achazose. Let's take a look. Ki yomuch Ochicho imoch, umoto yode verzakta bei. Vichi yomuch Ochicho imoch, v'nimkaloch v'savet be'avidosovet. וחיססי יד גר ותשב עם אוכל מוח הכי חיים אבנים כאן לגר ונדל ראי עם ראי כי יהיה בוכו אוהב ימחת אחיכו באחת שעוריכו לסעמי צס לבובכו ולסיק פצסיות חו מיוכיכו אוהב ינת מריחו אוהב ינת מיוכיחו אביין. אישום הלוך, פייה דובר מלבב חבליה, למקורו שנס השבע, שנס השמיטו. You were afraid, I mean, to give him a loan, to lend the money, because the Shmita is around, and then the Shmita will cancel the indebtedness. ורואה איכו ברכיחו אביין, ולסיתם לי, וקורא לכו לעד השם, כי ליד הלב ימיקרם אורץ, על כן הלכים מצפחו, לאמר, פוסח תפתח עשיותכו ליוכיחו לענייךו, נת לרעייךו. תוס, כי ימוכר לכו הוכיחו עברי עבריו, בעבוד חששונים, ששלחנו חופשי מימוך, ששלחנו ריקו, ושלחנו ריקו, הנקטניק לי. Why is it, what's the idea? That הוכיחו is wherever the Torah speaks about tzedakah, about charity, גמילות חסד, grace, kindness, benevolence, is always הוכיחו. When the Torah speaks about civil law and a dispute, the Torah uses the term Re'eyu. Because Re'eyu in Hebrew means nothing. V'chiyozid ish al Re'eyu le'orge be'omo. If one of you conspire to kill his friend with slyness, premeditated. How can you kill a friend if he's a friend? How can you kill him? So apparently either Re'eyu is not a friend, or he was a friend yesterday, but he's not a friend today. But anyway, Re'eyu means something which is very transitory, transient, doesn't last too long, doesn't endure, whatever it is. It's more an acquaintance, or more or less. Yeah. Ochicho means brotherhood. First of all, permanent. Couldn't say, Chiyozid ish al ochiv lahor gibom. It would be nonsensical to say. Means brotherhood. First of all, there's the element of permanency, the brotherhood. Brothers, I mean, usually, I mean, in a normal fashion, never part. I mean. And secondly, ochicha means what they share a common destiny. They have a common past, and they anticipate a coming future. It means they share the same destiny. Identity of destinies. Identity of fates. This is in Tzedakah. In Tzedakah always the symbol of solidarity. Of solidarity. And Mordechai, when Mordechai pressed for the holiday of Purim, so Mordechai was not so much interested that he, Jew, should celebrate that he was saved. I mean, it doesn't take much, I mean, to celebrate an event which actually changed, the destiny of the Jew for the better. But what Mordechai emphasized is to implant in the Jews the awareness of solidarity, that we are all brothers. We are all brothers. And it was at the beginning when the Jews spontaneously began to celebrate Purim. Purim was not declared was not institutionalized yet, was not introduced as a mandatory holiday. I mean, just spontaneously. So many Jews refrained from celebrating. Why did they refrain from celebrating? Simple reason, they thought they were not involved. Many American Jews tell me, I don't know, it's hard to argue, but to tell me, why should we celebrate in Yom HaAtzmaut in Eretz Yisrael? We were not involved. It's an argument you hear often, not involved. And actually, the Jew who lives in Boston was not involved. The Jews of Jerusalem would have been exterminated, but not the Jews who live in Boston. They are in the area of process, open, exposed. We live in walled cities, don't we? At least we think so. We do live in walled cities, we are protected, Baruch Hashem. So why should we join them? Why should we rejoice? This was the mentality of the Yudim Borea process. By Yudim in the walled cities. The Borea process were exposed to danger, they were involved, all right. They spontaneously rejoice. They were saved. Mevel Yontef, Mafila Leogodel, but why should we? And that's what Mordechai tried, Vayichtev Mordechai Sadvorim Eilem, Vayishlach Svorim El Kol HaYehudim. To everybody. Asher b'chol medinis ha-melech ha-chashverosh, ha-krevim v'archeikim. Those who are so far away. After all, it was Mayor Esrim Medina, it was such a large area, It doesn't matter, it doesn't mean that this forum of Haman, the edict reach every country within the great empire of Ahasuerus. It reached certain provinces. But in certain provinces, the Jews didn't know anything about the whole, about this whole, event. Kol HaYehudim, to everybody. Asher b'chol medinis ha-melech ha-chashverosh, ha-krevim v'archeikim. Those who are so far away. After all, it was Mayor Esrim Medina, it was such a large area, It doesn't matter, it doesn't mean that this forum of Haman, the edict reach every country within the great empire of Ahasuerus. It reached certain provinces. But in certain provinces, the Jews didn't know anything about the whole, about this whole, event, It was not, they couldn't broadcast that time. They sent, the other Rotsim. How far did the Rotsim, go? They are certain, a certain radius. What's Mayor Esther Medina? The Ram Medina is actually where the letter, the edict, was not proclaimed, and the Jews lived in safety and in security. And suddenly they get a letter from Mordechai to celebrate. Celebrate war. The Jews were saved. Who was saved? There were no papers, no radio, no correspondence, Who was saved? The Jews, within a certain radius from Shushan HaBirah. So why should we celebrate? Why should we be involved? So, Akrivim v'Ochekim, doctor, as distant, very distant countries, לקיים עליהם, להיסיסים, נסיים הבוס, הנחידש אדו, ועשים חמישה עשרים בכל שונה ושונה. כיומים השונוכו בהם היהודים מביאים, ואחרי השונה פח, לא הם מיוגר לשמחו מביא ליונטיב, לאסיסו ומישתו לשמחו משלוח מוזש של הרעים, ומעטון לסלוויינים. It is solidarity. You might have not been exposed to danger, I don't know. But solidarity is something very important among Jews. כמודך כהומן בן עמדוס, וקיבול היהודים, they've accepted, איס אשר החילו לאסיס, ואיס אשר, this is the order, הפרוז is accepted immediately, ואיס אשר כוסף מודך עליהם. כהומן בן עמדוס, ואגוגי ציר כל היהודים, חושב על היהודים לעבדום, ואיפיל פור ואגיר אלומם לעבדום. Now, so this was all, it's very interesting. It's up to here, up to Chav Zayin, Al-Kin Kol, Ayom Meile Purim, Al-Shim HaPur, means that accepted Purim only the generation we lived through, I mean, this episode, so to say. But they have not accepted, did not accept Purim for the succeeding generations. So the kibir ha-yudim is asher chilu la'asis. Those who live through, I mean, the event, akreinu v'chikin, but one generation only. But not as a permanent holiday, as a part of Jewish calendar forever. Then he said there was a second phase to put it. Kimu v'kiblu ha-yudim aleyem v'alzarum v'al kol ha-nirvim aleyem ולייעבר לייסעיסים לשני היומים האלה כחסובם וכזמנם בחלשונה ושונה. כל דיר ודיר משפחו ומשפחו ועיר ועיר מהפורם האלה ומתך היהודים וזכרם ליוסף מזרום. It was like that. The first phase Purim was celebrated spontaneously. Spontaneously it was celebrated just voluntarily spontaneously. It was not standardized for him, it was not fixed. There was no law, no religious legislation was passed, nor to introduce the observance of Purim as mandatory. This was only by the Yudim Borei HaProzeis. Mordechai insisted that all the Jews should celebrate Purim, regardless whether they were exposed, whether they think, I mean, they were involved or they were not involved. Because there's the element of solidarity and the awareness of a common destiny. This is number two, but only for one generation. Then later, Kimu v'Kiblu, they've accepted not only for one generation, for the generation which survived, which, I mean, lived through the events, but Aleyem v'Alzarom v'Al Kol Anuvim Aleyem. It's very interesting. V'Al Kol Anuvim Aleyem. This is very interesting. What does it mean, Kol Anuvim Aleihem? Gerim, the Rasha says it. Those who will join them. And of course, I mean, a Ger is supposed to fulfill all mitzvahs. Why the Kol Anuvim Aleihem? This is very interesting that what we think of Gerim. You see, Ger to us, a Ger, doesn't mean just one who joined our faith. You cannot join our faith unless you join our history. Our history. You cannot join our faith unless you join the fold, our people. Unless you participate in the destiny of the Jew. There is no gerus. Just gerus in order to be mekayim mitzvahs is not enough. A ger means a brother. Even though racially is a stranger, racially is alien to us, his parents were certainly not involved, but once he joins us, he is a part of our history. He calls Avraham, Alekeinu Elokei Avraham, I told you once, and he is involved in our, not only in the present, but in the past as well. That's why I call Anuvim Aleihem, ויסייסים השני היום האלה ככסוב ערך הזמנם, והיום האלה מסתור ודעסים, כל דיר ודיר משפוח ומשפוחו, מדין ומדינה, ועיר ועיר, והפורם אלה ים ותחיילים, וזיכרום ליוסף מזרום. I want you to understand, why was Purim so prominently, actually Purim took up a prominent place, a prominent position within our calendar. We hardly say about any other holiday, והיום ומי הפיר אומר ליאב ומתיך היהודים וזיכרום ליוסף מזרו. והרמב״ם, הנכס מגילה, says, the last הלוכה, and I would like to ask you just one favor. You should not bother me with questions, because I don't understand the Rambam either. But however, matter of fact, I did not intend to betray the secret and to show you the Rambam, but it's quite characteristic. Kol Sifrei HaNeviim, no questions, but no questions accepted, no questions answered. We'll just read it and translate it, and that's all. כל ספרי הנביאים, all the prophets, וכל הקסורים, all the books of the קסורים, הלכס מגילה, פרק בייז, הלוכה יותחס, the last one. הסידים ויבוטר למייס המשיח. Will be suspended, or canceled, or nullified, please, in the times of the Messiah, חוץ ממגילה ססטר, with the exception of מגילה ססטר. והרהי קיימס, מגילה ססטר will endure, כחמישה חומשי תירה, like the Pentateuch, וכהלכי של תירה שבעל פה, and like the laws of our oral transmission, שאינם פתילים לאילם, which will never be suspended. ואף על פי שכל זכרי נעצורס יבוטל, that the remembrance, the memory of all the disasters for which the Jews lived, all the disasters will be forgotten, all the catastrophes will be forgotten, will be erased from memory. Shenema kinishkechu atzor Yisrael harashenes haposuk. I mean, the all disasters have been forgotten. Vinistru meinai, they are hidden from my eyes. Yimei apurim, the days of Purim, lei botl will not be suspended. Shenema vimei apurim haile leyavru metecha yudim vizichom leyosot mezah. Very strange, and it's actually the Rambam is incomprehensible. We don't know what it means. The Neviim will be suspended. The Ravid already, I mean, argued with him. But why is Purim, does Purim occupy such a central position? He adds. Why? A disaster could have happened. And disaster was of major proportions. Because don't forget the Persian Empire, apparently the Jewish community, almost the total Jewish community, lived within, I mean, the Persian Empire. And if Haman's intention had been implemented, that's what the whole Jewish community might have been exterminated, physically exterminated. I mean, exactly what Hitler wanted to do. Hitler succeeded in exterminating one third. Haman, if he had succeeded, he would have exterminated the Jewish community in its entirety. I mean, because the Persian Empire, the Near East actually, I mean, encompassed the entire Jewish community. Yes, most probably. But still, it is basically, we spoke last week about Megillah Esther, that it's called the Geras, an epistle, a letter, and Esther insisted, we have interpreted the last parasha, Esther insisted that Megillah the Igeres be raised to the lofty status of Sefer. What does Sefer mean? A part of the canon of the Kisvei HaKedesh. She demanded that Megillah Esther be not just a historical document, just an event recorded, even though it is true and the story corresponds, contains the facts, the events which transpired, but he wanted the Megillah Esther to be raised to the status of Kisvei HaKedesh, to be endowed with Kedusha, and her request was granted by the Sanhedrin. We explained it. And v'nichtov v'sefer, ma'amar Esther kiyem divrei HaPurim ele, v'nichtov v'sefer, asher v'nichtov v'sefer means it's a part of Kisvei HaKedesh. It is invested with Kedusha in the same manner as Eshma Yisrael, I mean, is endowed with Kedusha, with sanctity. And I told you that time, if it's a book, if it's an Igeres, it's a historical document. There is no need to derive moral lessons from a historical document. Even though basically history is a good teacher, and one can derive moral lessons from any historical event. If you study history, it's not just you study the past, but you study certain patterns, you study certain rules, certain guidelines, which may actually, may help you, prove to be very helpful, in the future, actually. All right, but whatever, but history basically is a record of events. The very moment the Geras was raised to the status of a safe of a book, what's the difference between a book and a Geras? I said last time, Geras means temporary, transitory. You get a letter, you read a letter, you tear up the letter, and you throw the letter into the wastebasket. You don't need a letter. There is no letter which has permanent value. A book, a good book, is a classic. A classic persists, endures, forever. This is actually the nature of a classic. The very moment, Miguel Sester was raised by the Sanhedrin and declared part and parcel of the Kisra Kedesh, of the canon, it has become a book. And a book already, you study a book. A book is a source of knowledge. This is our concept of Kisra Kedesh. It's a source of knowledge. So we said, what more lessons can we derive from Miguel Sester? So you derive that the one aloche that the individual must sacrifice himself for the community. Even though, in the story of Esther. And today, we try to analyze, the responsibility of the individual and the humility the individual should feel, even though he has been chosen by the Ashgoche to be the representative of the Jews and to defend the Jews, he should be humble and not think that he is the only one who can save them and so forth. I told you. And they spoke. And then the common destiny that even the queen can exempt herself from the destiny, from the universal destiny of the Jewish people and so forth. Of course. And there is many more lessons to be derived. However, but there is something else to be derived from Megillas Esther. If Megillas Esther is a sefer, it's not only Igeres. Igeres means historical document. The very moment we say V'nichtav HaSefer, it's already symbolic. It's not only a historical document about a certain event, it carries symbolic significance for the future as well. As we say, Maiso have a simile about it. What is the symbolic content of Megillas Esther? This is the most important. The symbolic content of Megillas Esther is what the Balei HaKabbalah say, and this is the most beautiful interpretation of Mitzvah Samolik. Mitzvah Samolik, I said last Saturday night, and I repeat it again. Mitzvah Samolik, I heard it from my father, the Chayim Baruch, in the name of my grandfather, that Amolik basically does not refer anymore to a race, to people, because we have no races anymore. The Rambam about Chivam says, never zichron, they disappeared. And Amolik apparently persists, still endures. Ki yod al keisko, a hand on the, we'll read it on Purim, there is a hand on the divine throne, Muhammad Adeshem ba Amolik, God is engaged in war against Amolik, meteor there, forever and ever. Where is Amolik? God is engaged in war with Amolik? Amolik was a small tribe. A vicious tribe, most probably. A vicious tribe. A Bedouin tribe, probably. A vicious tribe. Used to infiltrate Eretz Israel. Used to make raids on villages, on the border villages, like the Al-Fatah makes now on the border kibbutzim. We used to kill women, children. That's what we may gather, from the Tanakh, you see Amalek. A warrior, a tribe of warriors, probably very brave, and so forth. What is Muhammad Adeshem Ba'amalek Midor Dor? Now Tishkoch, you should never forget. So Amalek is more than a tribe. It's more than a racial group, which already has been which is extinct, the racial group. Can you point out Amalek now? So they said that Al-Pi Aloche is any nation, any group. Any nation, any group of people. which has made up its mind to exterminate the Jewish people, either spiritually or physically, that group is, we assign to that group the term and the status of Amalek. The Nazis were Amalekim, no doubt about it. Certain groups within the Arab, and I wouldn't say all Arabs, Chas v'Sholem, but certain groups certainly come under this category, because my father used the pasuk in Tilly, L'chu v'nachidim again. If a people writes on its banner, L'chu v'nachidim again, let us exterminate them and being a nation. V'le'izocher shem Yisrael eid b'oretz. And the name of Israel should not be mentioned anymore, should not be pronounced anymore. This group, such a group, whether it's a communist group or a Nazi group or a fascist group, doesn't matter, or a Muslim group, gets the status of Amalek. And this is true. And from time to time, unfortunately, we encounter such groups. We've encountered Nazis. It was a surprise. Terrible surprise to Jewish people. To emancipate a Jew was a surprise. It was a surprise, a stunning surprise to the German Jews, believe me. A stunning surprise. And it was a stunning surprise to the civilized world, to the Western Jew. But we met with them. We had a confrontation with them, a very unfortunate confrontation. We've lost one third of, and the best third of our people. But it hasn't. We thought that 1945, with the destruction of Berchtesgaden and all this, it's a goodbye to Amalek. Amalek is not eternal. Amalek is just a temporal phenomenon. It was something anomalous in human history that a Hitler could exist and a Hitler could preach hatred and bigotry and murder and bloodshed and extermination, genocide and so forth. We made a mistake. 20 years after, we have now such voices we hear from the Near East. I mean, what is Faisal's speech, I mean, in Mecca just 2 days ago? It's an Amaleki speech. He proclaimed the jihad, the holy war. The Jews have desecrated the Muslim shrines in Jerusalem. It's not true, it's false. It's only Amalek starts with this. Disseminating, I mean, false rumors about the Jews. And I'm sorry to say, I'm afraid that certain groups within the communist empire are very close to the Amalek ideology. If not physical extermination, it is spiritual extermination, certainly. Because their policy, I told you many times, the Russian policy vis-à-vis Eretz Yisrael is not to be explained in terms of realpolitik. You are all making a mistake, and the government in Israel is making a mistake. If they explain the Russian policy, a policy of complete annihilation of the Medina. Now, mind what they say. Officially, you don't want that. The downfall of the state of Israel. Never mind what they say. They are liars. But the policy is not to be explained and not to be understood in terms of realpolitik, of making trouble for America and the Near East, and of getting bases in the Near East. It's by far more than realpolitik. It's based on hatred, on hate. Why hate, I don't know. In my opinion, perhaps it's an opinion of an old Rav who perhaps is not sophisticated enough, but in my opinion is simply a power which ideologically is rooted in atheism must hate the Jewish people who have given to the world the word of God. Basically, we are the apostles of God. We are a people of God. We are the people of the Bible. We are the people of the Sefer HaSforim. And a movement which was born and reared in atheism. And atheism is not just an auxiliary idea. It's not just an auxiliary idea, a secondary idea. It's the very focus of communism. I mean, you know that well. Such a movement must hate the Jewish people, and such a movement cannot tolerate, I mean, the rise of the Jew in this, the emergence of the Jew in the historical arena. This is my interpretation. Perhaps it's wrong. I wish it should be wrong. Anyway. Indeed, that's why Megillas Esther also, you see. Megillas Esther, per se, if you read the story, and Chazal have supplemented very well the story, and don't forget that Chazal lived in Persia. Later, hundreds of years later, but he knew the climate, you understand. That's all. Chazal supplemented the story, and they've adorned the story with wonderful details. But basically, the Jews enjoyed in Persia a status of equality. The Gemara in Megillah tells us, I don't know how the Gemara got the number, but the Gemara in Megillah tells us that to the celebration, the great celebration which was staged by Ahasuerus in the third year of his ascending the throne, 12,000 prominent Jews were invited. We enjoy freedom in America, but you've never heard that the president in Washington should invite 12,000 Jews to a reception in Washington. 12,000, that's what Chazal say, have participated in the festival and were invited by his royal, by his majesty. So it means they enjoyed full equality. The best proof is that Esther remained queen after her race was discovered, that everybody knew that the queen is a Jewess. And Mordechai was appointed prime minister. And no one complained about him. No one complained. So it means they enjoyed freedom. They enjoyed equality. Now how is it possible that within one day the status should be changed and Haman should prevail upon Ahasuerus to issue an edict of extermination? In a country where the Jews enjoyed freedom. Apparently it is possible, I don't know how. This is exactly what happened in Germany, exactly what happened in Russia. Communist movement, actually the fathers of the communist movement were Jews. Those who were responsible for the revolution, with the exception of Lenin, who were Jews. Trotsky and Kamenev and Zinoviev and all of them. The great minds of communism were Jews, the great minds. The theoreticians of communism were Jews. I'm not speaking about Karl Marx now anymore, but I'm speaking about the Russian communists, the old communists, the so-called, those who were responsible for the revolution in 1918 were Jews. None of them we don't know, but they were, all Jews. Actually, the ideology was formulated and elaborated by Jews. And how such a movement can now incorporate, can somehow integrate in its anti-Semitism, in its ideology, is beyond me. I can't understand it, but it's a fact. It's a fact. Evidence, if you accumulate evidence, you begin, as a matter of fact, a couple of years ago, I also, you say, this is nothing. It's just that. And I was opposed to all the anti-Russian demonstrations and so forth. But now, the more I read, and the more Russian papers I come across, you don't read Russian papers, but I do read the Russian papers, the material they print now, the funnies and the caricatures they published are reminiscent of the Stürmer and the Angriff of Germany, of the Nazi period, of the Nazi era. I happen to be in Germany. So I know, I can compare. And he gave a reason. How is it possible, how was it possible for Haman to persuade Ahasuerus? Ahasuerus was a democratic king, a liberal king. How could he persuade him? This is a paradox in our history. But there is something else which I want to say. The Chachmei HaKabbalah say that basically Amalek can be found in every one of us, in every man. There is an Amaleki in every man. There is instinctual, natural evil in every man. Whatever it is, there is an Amaleki in every man. They call it Amaleki, they call it Teyu Vaveyu. There is an element, a certain instinct of destructiveness, of hatred, of envy, of malice, of viciousness in everyone. Call it a malice, call it whatever you want, but there is an, and basically, man has actually, man, according to Chachmei HaKabbalah, and they've beautifully, interpreted Amalek, in man, actually, there is always a struggle between the Tzelem Malekim in him and the Amalek in him. There is always a struggle. They are locked in combat. No man can be sure about himself. Not only I cannot be sure about someone else, but I cannot be sure about myself. And from time to time, the Amalek somehow emerges in every man and wakes up somehow, and every man can become dangerous, can become very aggressive, can become actually a personification of evil himself, the best one. And basically, the Torah over there, the Chachmei HaKabbalah say, the purpose of the Torah, the purpose of many laws, is simply to destroy Amalek, to exterminate gradually Amalek, the Amalek who dwells or abides within me. There are satanic forces in man, and there are divine forces in man. Man is both. He is Satan and an angel. And the Torah said, Zocher asher osa lo Amalek baderer betzeis chemi mitzroim, is referring not only to some historical Amalek, to some tribe, but means to the Amalek within the human being himself. Human being himself. And this exactly, and Chachmei HaKabbalah interpret, the Megillah Esther in symbols, that actually in a symbolic fashion, that actually it was a struggle between Mordechai and Amalek. This is between the satanic forces in man and the divine image. Sometimes it emerges into a historical arena, but every man should actually look out for his own Amalek, for his own Satan. And that's why in the Chachmei HaKabbalah said that Megillas Esther is the story of the struggle between man and Satan. Which will probably end in the victory of man. This according to Chachmei HaKabbalah. It's not only Chachmei HaKabbalah, it has penetrated into the Chachmei HaDrush as well. Of course, it's a historical document, it's a geres. As a sefer, it has a certain symbolism. It's symbolic as far as our history is concerned. Our history, the surprises we are confronted with, unexpectedly. We suddenly see a change in attitude to others, and hatred which is not warranted, hatred which cannot be explained, and also the individual, problem, of every one of us when he faces problems, which will determine, is actually future course or his future life, whether it will be related to the Tzelem Elokim or to Amalek. This is the Chachmei HaKabbalah, all of them. In a word, a man, there is no need. This is the main difference. Actually, future course or his future life, whether it will be related to Tzelem Elokim or to Amalek. This is the Chachmei HaKabbalah, all of them. In a word, a man, there is no need. This is the main difference between Yehadus, the Megillas Esther, and Western civilization. Yehadus has never rejected human conquest, or the human greatness to, I mean, and the human ability, I mean, to conquer the environment. The others is, in this regard, I mean, so progressive that no other religion can simply catch up with the others. Take, for instance, medicine. It's a very strange thing. All religions had problems with medicine. The whole problem, if God makes you sick, what right do you have, I mean, to heal, or to apply a cure, to cure the sick? To employ, I mean, certain means, I mean, to restore your health. Problem? Christian Science hasn't overcome the problem yet. It's a fact. It is a sect in Christianity, an American sect. It's not a sect somewhere in the Orient. It's an American sect which rejects medicine. And the problem is, if you are sick, so it's the will of God. So let God make you well. What right does man have to intervene? The Hadith was never bothered by this. It was never troubled by this at all. The rabbi, your rabbi. Not to reshoes man being only is permitted. He should. It means duty. And God himself is called the healer. Reifel chol boso. Reifel chol tachleichi. A healer. Never have a problem. The Ramban says, whoever takes sick and doesn't consult a doctor, the Shefer Domin. He's a murderer. Commits suicide. We are the one. We certainly believe and we certainly accept the thesis that man should control the environment and should gain control over certain insensate, certain mechanical forces in order to promote his physical welfare. There is no doubt about it. He had his outspoken of it. However, and when the Rebbe Yisrael created man, the Rebbe Yisrael told Adam, "Pruvu minus arets, v'kifshua, conquer the land." You conquer nature. How can you conquer nature? By eavesdropping on nature's secrets. How can you eavesdrop? Through the scientific method. You simply steal the secrets from nature. And by knowing her secrets, you control nature. And sometimes you work against her, because when she becomes malicious and vicious. However, but there is, as far as this is concerned, Western civilization and Yahadis go hand in hand. There is no discrepancy. But as far as man is concerned, the worth of man and his role, here Yahadis and Western civilization part company. Western civilization basically is optimistic about men, very optimistic. And Western civilization thinks that man, if left alone, will finally become not only a powerful being, it's not enough, will become also a good, kind being, an ethical being, a moral being. Here somehow the same, it is to some extent true, the others will also accept it. There is something in man, no doubt about it. There is some secret spring within a man. Or there is some secret power in man which drives him, I mean, to be good, I mean, and to be noble. There is something which redeems man within man, which if utilized, may redeem and purge him, cleanse him, elevate him. And that's on this basis all the natural systems of ethics and morality are. Rest, I mean. You leave man will take care of himself. He does not need divine guidance. This is what Western civilization says, secular civilization. Here Yahadus comes in and says, no matter how powerful man is, and no matter how intelligent he is, there is a Satan in man. You can never be sure. The Satan is also intelligent, also powerful. You can never be sure. Who will win the battle? The Satan or the angel? You can never be sure. There is a source of Satan. There is a Satan in him. There is malice in man. There is viciousness in man. There is evil in man. Man cannot be left alone. Man will never become become, I mean, an ethical person, a great moral personality if left alone. Man needs divine guidance. Don't rely on his own norm, on his own moral law. If there is no faith in God, man will be able to fly, yes, to fly to the moon, but he won't be able to live in peace with his next door neighbor. Don't believe man. Yehadus, very strange. Yehadus thought very highly of man, but Tzelem Elokim also saw them. On the other hand, also had an opinion of man, a very pessimistic opinion of man, that man is a beast as well. And here is a...